You will never find the more wretched hive of scum and villainy. We must be cautious.
It's the Resistance!
Welcome, everybody, to the Scum and Villainy podcast, number something or other. I would know that if I did my homework, but we don't do that here. This is the Scum and Villainy B-Team. We've got myself, Tyler Starslinger 72 Tippets, joining you. I think I'm the ship's cook, but I don't know. We might be changing some responsibilities around there. Also jumping in with me is Will Misspelled Bill Barnacle. How's it going, my dude? Long, awkward pause.
Oh. He's talking something.
Oh, and EDC. All right, we'll fix this in post. We're probably not fixing this in post. Next up, I have Kalen. How's it going, my dude?
Oh, it's going well. I have finally slept a good night's sleep in many, many nights.
Yeah, I feel that. We'll talk about my travel stories later.
Yeah.
And then lastly, we have Blair Bunky, better known as Scruffy, the ship's janitor. What's going on, dude?
Hello.
How pumped are you for LVO, sir?
Four and a half.
Okay. All right.
It's kind of low.
And now, is that X-Wing related in any way, or just like, going on vacation to Vegas? This is going to be great.
Probably a little more excited about the vacation than the X-Wing.
Yeah, 100%. Say, I'm 100% there. Okay. Well, since Will DC'd, we'll wait on him talking about the Last Chance Qualifier, because he got to compete in that this past weekend. Because for those of you that don't know, this past weekend was the FFG Con X-Wing and Destiny World Championship, all that fun stuff up in beautiful St. Paul, Minnesota, which was surprisingly not as cold as it could have been. Like, it was hoodie weather the whole time, which was pretty cool.
It was actually some lovely nights. I remember walking back, I think, on day one, the night, like 11:30 night, and it was actually a warm breeze. Like,
yeah,
I walked back, so it was actually warm.
Yep. You know, so it was like day 1B got really cold, but then like Saturday was like beautiful. Like, I don't know what happened, but hey, I'll take it. That's the Midwest for you. If you don't like the weather, wait a day, it'll change.
Yeah.
So, for those of you that don't know, Kalen and myself were members of Team USA in the Coruscant Invitational. We were part of Team Pacific. It was not Team USA.
Yeah. It was not Team Pacific. It's Team Pacific. I guess all our continents touch the Pacific Ocean, because I guess it's the closest thing, because there's definitely people from the East Coast.
Oh, that's true. Well, yeah, sure. The U.S. touches the Pacific. It's fine.
Yeah.
They decided they couldn't go with Team Former Colonies, which I think would have been hilarious. So for those of you out of the loop, this was basically the 7 North American System Open winners plus the Australian System Open winner. And then the Australian System Open winner, XY, was actually from Singapore. So is there only one Canadian System Open?
Like, yeah, there's only Toronto.
Yeah, okay, so you were the only Canadian, then we had XY from Singapore, and then we had 6 Americans from the U.S. And Philip Booth couldn't make it because he went on active deployment like 3 weeks before Worlds. And so Carson, the North American Gen Con winner, came in and subbed for us. 1 second, I got my dog. Okay, so it was an 8-player team event. Or I guess I should say 8 players per team. So we basically each had to submit a list that was faction unique. So each team had all 7 factions played. And there was no other list restrictions other than that. So there was no, like, you can only have 1 Anakin / Darth Vader / Young Annie across all the factions or anything like that. It was just you had to have all 7 factions. And then the team captain, who was the player that had won the largest system open on their team, they got to bring a blind list. So they got to bring an extra list that the opposing team didn't know about until you actually sat down at the table and played.
Well, it's a funny start to that. Now looking back at it, it was the most obvious list for both the team captain.
Oh yeah, 100%. Like both team captains legitimately ran like their system open winning list. Like in all of our documentations, Jack, we just had like in parentheses probably Han Jake, and then turns out it was Han Jake.
Yeah.
And we to give a little bit of the history, this was supposed to be a fun team event that they were going to experiment with, but we didn't get the epic stuff delivered in time. So they wanted to have given us epic stuff and like let us kind of show off that for them just having, you know, stream games and all that kind of stuff. And it was going to be cool because it was basically going to be the captains each had an epic list. And then three of the, I think it was going to be three of the players on the opposing team would fight the captain with like their lists kind of a deal. But that ended up not happening. So what we ended up doing was do five rounds of pairing up all 16 players and then see who has the most number of wins after the five rounds. So XY was our team captain. He had four total more people than Chicago. So he beat me out by four people, which is rough. But he had me come up and help do all the pairings and everything.
Yeah, you're pretty much second in command.
Yeah, yeah. I was our pairing specialist. And so I flew the Confederacy. So I flew a Sunfac mini swarm with a vulture swarm. So I had like Sunfac with ensnare and then five vultures with struts. And I had the trade drones, which are the I-1 vultures, because in all of our go back and forth, we decided we wanted me and we wanted Joel Killingsworth to be the two like heavy anti-ace players. And Joel was running my Gen Con Sense Vader list. And so he was our Empire player. And for all those people going, oh, you weren't playing Empire. We had like five people qualify for Coruscant playing Empire. So some of us had to switch.
Yeah, I think the hardest thing is trying to find someone who's going to play Scum.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Played Empire at the main event then for Worlds, right, Tyra?
Sure didn't. Nope, kept my Scum list.
Oh.
Or kept my Confederacy list. But, so one of the things that we did when we were sitting there going back and forth was we didn't know how deep of a bid they would use. Hey, Will's back. We're talking about Coruscant. We'll get to you in a minute.
No problem.
We didn't know how deep of a bid I needed. And so I actually went for like the heavy 22 point Confederacy bid, which was massively overvalued. Like the deepest bid they had outside of the Han Jake bid was 9 points, I think.
Yeah, their Imperialist had a 9 point bid there.
Like, yeah. And my actual Worlds list and on the list I had all the practice with had the I-3 vultures, which would have made a huge difference. So that was one of those frustrating things. Like, we just made the wrong call. They went for lower bids and the huge bid didn't end up mattering for me ever. Kaelin, what'd you fly for Coruscant?
So I got to play the Rebels and I brought it as a twist on what I actually flew to Toronto. So I flew three Talos Squadron Z95s with Crackshot, a Blue Squadron B-Wing with Tractor Beam, a Blue Squadron Escort X-Wing with S-Foils and AP-5 with Leia. And it just was a solid six-ship generic swarm.
Yeah. So that was one of the interesting things that we did was our resistance list was four-ship, right?
Yeah, our resistance beef, which was the beefiest list. It was two I-5s and two I-3s with Rose, Jess, Pava, Nien Num, and Tally. Which is still four ships and has some beefiness behind it, was our lowest ship count.
Right. Everybody else had five ships or six ships or plus. Because I think XY had seven, right?
Yeah, XY had seven. Everyone else had five or six.
So that was pretty cool where they were just like, the European players were looking as like, well, I guess it's another swarm. This guy doesn't want to see swarms. Who are you going to have to fight?
A lot of their lists, like their poor Imperial player was thrown under the bus five times.
Man. Yep, was.
He did not get any good matchup because he was like, okay, yeah. I have a decent bid. I can go fight some other people with trip aces. And it's just hit points after hit points after hit points.
Yeah. So it was a really fun event. I got to play Jack in the first round, which is just an absolute trash matchup for me, right? Like Luke Gunner, R2-D2, Krubaka on Han with engine upgrade and probably some other nonsense in there. And I lost at time by 1 point when we had been doing the math wrong and thought I was winning. And that includes Sunfac having a console fire for three turns.
And him killing
a vulture on the last turn to not take an extra shot, and then my shots into him took him to one hit point. Kind of a deal.
It was a crazy, awesome close game.
Yeah, yeah, it was a really fun game. That had no right to be that close at all. Like I should have lost that game super hard, but It was like, I mean, it was some weird stuff where I used my swarm to force him to boost away from the rocks. And then my son was range one of Han, like just nose to nose. And then he rolled four blank and then couldn't reroll because he was too far away from the rocks. I was like, oh, hey, it works. I did it, guys.
Man, just stare Han down with Sunfag. It'll be fine. Completely fine.
Yeah. And the way the pairing rules worked was actually pretty cool. So it was, we would select a team that we were going to pair. So it's like for Team Pacific or for Team Former Colonies, we would say, all right, we're putting Kaelin down. And then Team Europe would look at our remaining, or would look at their lists and say, okay, you can't play against our Empire player. So then we would look at the remaining seven lists and pick. But you also couldn't play against the person you had played in the previous round, which actually came up all the time. So it was basically like the final three matchups would get kind of auto-paired pretty frequently with how the ban system worked. Which I don't know, as Kaelin, if you guys even really ever saw what we were doing with it, because it would just be like, ah, nope, okay, we want this matchup and we'll give them the final three.
I saw a little bit, but it was kind of hard to see from on the outside. Yeah. But yeah, I knew it was a lot of give and take of which lists, because since we put out a list, okay, it was saying like, yeah, Tyler, you're playing. The opponent plays, okay, we don't want Tyler's list against this, but then there's still six other lists we can pick from and hopefully pick up a good matchup.
So it was interesting, and we never actually got to sit down with it, but I wanted to sit down with Jack, who was the captain for the European team, because we had XY had like a crazy spreadsheet that was like color coded, because we all filled out like a one to five on what we thought our good matches and our bad matches were. And then Europe did something similar, right? Like, is this a bad match? Like, who do you not want to see? And then like after round one, I look at our matchups and I was like, okay, we've got six good matches and two bad matchups. Like, me and Carson were thrown under the bus. And so I was like, okay, we're going to like come out 6-2, maybe 5-3, like maybe one of our good matches we drop, you know, it's like we underestimated something, or, you know, you just have that weird game where like stuff goes wrong. Right. And then we came out of that round 1-7 with Kaelin being the only person to win.
Yeah. Keeping us afloat.
Yeah. 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 And we made some quick
adjustments.
Yeah. Correct. So then we went like 5-3, 5-3, 4-4, 4-4. To finish, like, what is that comes out to? We were down 21-19. Yeah, 21-19. And some crazy close. It was 21-19, and if we had tied, so had we gone 5-3 in the last round and ended up 20-20, we had the tiebreaker, which was points killed.
Yeah, like, we actually at the end of it. So we were down two games, but points destroyed. We actually destroyed 80 more points in the two games. So
it was
super close amount of points we destroyed from each other.
Yep. So it was a really fun event. It was cool. Did you have to play anybody twice?
No, I actually played five different players.
Yeah, I played five different players as well.
I think it was a couple. Andrew had to play the same person.
Yeah, twice. Man. Andrew. So we were worried about, they had a CIS, right? And so we were worried about it. And so we're like, okay, we don't really know who we want to pair into that. We can kind of pair me into it because he was all I1s as well. So it's like, if my vultures and his vultures crash, if we get a decent amount killed, then my son Fat can just kind of clean up, right? Because he's worth more than three or four vultures, like, easily.
Yeah.
Spoiler, turns out when I played him, my vultures died, his vultures didn't, and then Sun Fat could not go like 1v6 or whatever the number was. It was pretty obnoxious.
Yeah, I don't know. I got to play him the last round. It was Benedict. Still a good player, but like, I think it's just the gods decided that day I was only allowed to kill one vulture per round maximum. Any other shots after that, it was like, nope.
Yeah, no, that was all five of his games. Benedict was just on fire, because we put a sinker swarm, which is all I2 and 3, right, into his all I1 drone seer swarm twice. And I guess on the first engagements of the first game, Knuckles did one damage to a vulture, like, with all of his shots. And then the second game that he got paired up into him again, where I kind of looked at him, I was like, okay, like, you lost it the last time, you got to make up for this, like, you know, we're counting on you. He only did like two damage to a vulture on the initial engage, which is the same thing that happened to me. Like, I lost three vultures, he lost one.
So when I played him, I managed to get, I killed a vulture before it fired with a B-wing X-wing shot. But I had three Z95s lined up into another one with two crack shots lined up.
Yep.
And I failed to kill it. two damage because one of my cracks shot Zen 85 to say, like, at this point, like,
one hit point each.
Blank out now. Like, cool. Love
so, of course, that was a lot of fun. Those games are on FFG's Twitch page. Like, so FFG streamed those games.
Separate drones. Over the course of the game, and not one was in double damage. Those all went on Gold Squadron and Junkies. There's no extra damage, but they just constantly just left it.
Oh, yeah, maybe. That sounds right.
One hit point every round, so it was harsh. It streamed, yeah, they streamed the Coruscant for day one. There was no last chance qualifier game streamed by FFG themselves. Yeah. So there were five games. I think first game was Andrew versus the Seer Swarm.
I didn't get on the main stream, and I know Carson was on it last round in like a terrible matchup that
I can't remember the second game, which was pretty hilarious. Or the third. And there was they put on a new person every round. I don't think they doubled up on any game. They tried to have everyone represented there.
Yeah. It's true.
I think Carson managed to turn around because he started off 0-3, but then that was a lot of fun. Win, and he got thrown under the bus because he
played in the last chance qualifier, right?
Anyway, at the end, so he did it.
So what were you flying, and how did that go?
I was flying what I've been flying forever: four X-wings, Garvin, Wedge with R2, Biggs, and then a selfless red vet. Went 4-2 with it, and my only two losses, one was by a single point and the other one was by 16. So actually felt fairly okay. Didn't see any Nantexes or anything like that in the LCQ. I felt at least good enough to think I could take it into the second day. So that turned out to not go my way, but we'll get to that here in a second.
Well, how many rounds was the last chance qualifier?
It was six, so you pretty much had to go 4-2 minimum to make it into one of the other two main flights. And then some of the 3-3s actually got in as well. I can't remember how far down the 3-3 ladder it went, but it wasn't like there was only like one or two. It was quite a few down the 3-3.
Yeah, I knew they said something like 128 spots. So it's probably, if you're trying to get an invite to Worlds and next year they have a last chance qualifier, it's probably your best chance, even over a hyperspace trial.
Oh, yeah, easy. Well, maybe not over your like 16-man hyperspace trials you get out in Montana, but for normal people that have real hyperspace trials, go to the last chance, you'll be fine.
Last chance qualifier or top eight in a system open are probably, the system open one's still difficult, but at least there's eight spots there.
Yeah, I think I finished like something like 47th or something like that. So that was where I was at one of the 4-2. I think I had a pretty decent MOV out of the 4-2 as well, since my two losses were only by a few points. I think Tyler, your dad made it in at 3-3, right?
He was one of the 3-3s. Yeah, there was very few 3-3s that missed it.
Oh, okay. I didn't know it was most of the 3-3s. So yeah.
I think so. I might be wrong on that, but I feel like it was most of them.
I know is throughout the day, I'm not sure what the total number of people at last chance qualifier, but I believe it was over 200. People are saying that some 2s and 4s might have got in if the numbers were low enough, but it turned out not to be that way. But it was looking like there's going to be a lot of space. So pretty much, there's a bunch of 3-3s that did make it. So as long as you had decent MOV. Which is a funny thing, actually. A lot of people were saying over the weekend, MOV did not matter. MOV completely mattered, and I'll talk about that on my run.
Okay.
So, anyways. Should we just talk about Day 1A then? We all played Day 1A here.
So my dad, Will, got in on the LCQ. Me and Kaylin, we were already Day 1A. As of, like, everybody else and their brother that wasn't European was playing Day 1A. It was pretty ridiculous.
Yeah, it was ridiculous. It was the amount of talent that was in, actually in both days was ridiculous. But like talking to everyone I'd heard locally and like what day they were in was Day 1A. It was a lot of people.
Yeah, it was definitely a murderer's row when you look down the tables there several times. I glanced down and I'm like, damn, there's a lot of really, really good players that are all sitting in the same record spot right now.
So. It was, I mean, Yes. I think my first round game also, well, okay. So quick shout out to Gold Squadron. They did a pretty amazing job, just like overall. I know Dion's been working on this for like the last couple of months, him and Luke and those guys. And they had three streams going that were recording games. And then when you would tune into Gold Squadron, I think I'm going to go back and watch it because I want to see how everything actually lined up. But they would be having a main game and they would bring in highlights from the other games into like the main page the entire time. But everything's going to get uploaded to YouTube.
Yeah, so what I've heard, like, that is Dion ran three streams. Himself would run the primary thing, and he had three different groups of people casting and commentating on the three games, and he would, over above all that, rotate between the three when action's happening,
yep,
and put his own two cents and have the switch the audio note. It was amazing to see what he did there.
Yeah, it was just
three games simultaneously.
It was really sick.
And I believe I talked to him that all games that he will be uploading to his YouTube channel, and each one will be separate and have the full commentary of that one game. So it's going to be, there's going to be a lot of material Dion's going to be putting up, because that's, he did three games a day or three games at a time, and there was seven
per round.
Like, per round. Yeah. So there's like 21 games a day. There's going to be close to about 60 games recorded on Gold Squadron coming up. Well, she even probably more than that.
Yeah, no, because it's he had the LCQ as well, so it's it was you know, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday.
Yeah, it's gonna be at least like 80 games coming up to Gold Squadron within the next couple weeks and months, and I'm looking forward to see some of the games that were recorded.
Yeah, so I did not play well. I went like 1-4 in Coruscant, although I took a number of bad matchups. I took a number of hard matchups to take them out of the pool for everybody else. And then when in the actual Worlds events, I pulled a Tie Swarm that was shooting at 4-5, like a Double Swarm Tactics Tie Swarm, which is almost an unwinnable match for me. It's like, if I can get Sun to the end game against like two, like three or four ties, it's fine, but that's hard through Aiden and all that, right?
Yeah,
and I actually had the game well in hand, and I was playing Aaron. I knocked Aaron out of Hoth. Like, I was his second loss in the main day, or he might have been in cut. I don't remember which. He was a very good player, and I think I had the game in hand until his last shot of the round put a disabled power regulator on my vulture droid that was on a rock. And I had no idea how that worked. I was like, okay, judge, does my vulture float off? Does he stay there? Like, what goes on? Which turned out to be there's two crits. It was either that or damage sensor array stops me from barrel rolling. And if I don't take either of those crits on that shot, I barrel roll off the rock and block all the K-turns for the Tie Swarm. And Sun is like, but was behind them at this point. So that would have been two uncontested turns for Sun to just truck things, and that would have been game over. As a result, the Tie Swarm completely K-turned, and my Sunfac had a much harder time to do anything at that point.
Yeah.
So that was a rough game. And then I ended up like playing Chris Allen on like the 0-1 table, and then went to 0-2, and it just went downhill from there.
Yeah, I just remember you coming over looking for the bottle of vodka. Quite early.
Correct. That's a good thing to point out. So Team Europe brought over a goodie bag for Team Pacific, which was like a bottle of Polish vodka, a bottle of some kind of champagne, I think.
Yeah, it was like rosé champagne.
Okay. And then a bunch of, like, what were the waffle syrup waffle cookie things?
Stroop waffles. They're Dutch syrup waffle cookies. They're delicious. They're chewy tea cookies.
Yeah,
and then if you actually get them from Holland, they're actually fresh and not stale.
So
you got some gummy bears and some other candies as well.
Yeah. So I may or may not have had that bottle of vodka in my backpack for like the second day, and was a good time. And also, like, all of Team Canada had a bunch of booze there. They had a bunch of mini bottles. So, like, shout out to those guys. Whatever version of Team Canada, the Winnebago Canadians that came down.
Yeah, the Canada House Team Canada.
Yeah,
which was the majority of players. I believe there was the Team Canada House had, I believe, original 31 people signed up for it. I think 27 managed to make it.
Nice.
They had an RV driven down with a bunch of the group.
Yeah,
and the rest flew or had their own sets of transportation.
Oh, that's awesome!
They got two Airbnbs. That's super cool. There are two townhouses side by side, and they stayed there. So yeah, and And because I had such a large group, I believe even with that, I since I had my own trip stayed, I stayed at a hotel nearby, but I probably would have stayed with them otherwise. They had even like a food fund, so everyone pitched in some money, and they would have the stockpile of groceries built.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome.
Hey, you need want to make yourself a sandwich? Go make yourself a sandwich. It's all there available. So yeah, and they actually managed to do it. I think it's probably going to happen again. Just a quick shout out to them. It's like, was it Timbo and Devin Munkus organized it, and they did a great job.
Yeah, those jerseys were sick, dude.
The jerseys they made as well.
But yeah, they kept me intoxicated pretty much the entire weekend after bombing out on day 1A.
So, Will, how was your run? Day
1A? Mine did not go much better, really, at all. I started out seeing Jeremy Chambley running double Nantex Grievous in my first round game, so basically an auto loss.
I didn't have to see it.
It was a fun game. It's always fun playing Jeremy, but I basically traded Wedge for Sunfac, which in theory is a decent trade. I mean, he got to put a Sunfac next to two Death Stars on his X-Wing, but it basically sacrificed position for the whole rest of my list. And when you've got Chertek, you know, on the table with a bid and Wedge is gone, it's just like he has another Sun. So it was game over from there. And then I went from that and played Soontir double Inquisitor Jenden. That was my best flown game of the entire, you know, weekend. I did have one misplay early where a shuttle got in the middle of my formation. I didn't think it would fit, and it just barely did. On a rock, if I remember right, but he still got it in there and jammed stuff up. So that ended up, you know, I took too much damage early on Wedge. But it came down to an untouched Garvin on an untouched Soontir and an untouched Inquisitor, and I proceeded to go for over 30 minutes outflying Marcus. Got half of Soontir and kept throwing dice at this stupid Inquisitor and could not get the second shield off to win at time. So that
shocking! You couldn't hit an Inquisitor with Force of Eight with one shot every turn.
Exactly.
Never would have guessed.
Yeah. And at one point, Marcus felt so bad because he was like shooting Garvin, and he could not hit Garvin again. And he's just like, I can't hit that guy. And I'm like, I just stared at him, and he's just like, oh, my bad. I'm sorry. Because he realized that he was getting shot at with me getting quality shots at him for multiple turns in a row without him getting anything in return and not getting anywhere. So that was my 0-2 game. And it just kind of got a little bit silly as the day goes on from there. My third game, I literally looked at a clock at about 45 minutes left or so. And from that point on, I literally did zero damage to this guy's resistance list, which is just one of those silly things that you're just like, how did this even happen? And then I had a fire spray game later in the day where my 5 hit point Garvin got one shot essentially by a Boba who just boosted with no mod than roll and his Maul Force to basically get fuel leak, you know, as the first crit that got through and, you know, killed him. So that was just kind of crazy. So my day was pretty much over from there. I had fun playing your dad. We got matched up, I think, round 6, which was cool. And then it was, you know, just kind of coasting to the finish line after that.
Yeah, I think I had to play Brandon Prokos after we had both been knocked out, like in round 5. And he was running like a double Phantom rack. And I was just like, want to see what happens if Rack jousts the 5 vultures? He was like, yes. So we just like had the honorable joust on the side of the board. Turns out the vultures win, if anybody was curious.
Shocking.
That is just shocking. 10 attack days into a 0 agility ship? Who would know?
Yeah. I mean, hey, it could have reinforced. It could happen.
It could happen, yes.
Yeah. But anyway. So yeah, day 1A. Kalen, how'd you end up doing? Like, you were the hero of Scum and Villainy.
I was the hero of many things. I was I tried to carry team Pacific or team former colonies on my back at the beginning of the week. And going to day 1A, I was still going on my list. My list was 3 resistance A-wings and 2 transport pods. So the A-wings are the standard affair, heroic optics. I had 2 crack shots, one on Zari, one on a green squadron. My third A-wing was Greer. And then I brought 2 pods, Finn and Vibrati. So Finn was a heroic optics and Perceptor Copilot, the standard hyper aggressive one. that most people dropped in favor of Pattern Analyzer, which is probably the best choice for most lists, but not this one. And then I brought the hero card that no one expected to see anywhere, GA97, for It's the Resistance condition, just to throw Finn off the table and hyperspace in behind people. And I've been actually flying this list since like August, has tried it out, and I've really enjoyed it flying most lists. And I had a little hiccup when the Nantexes came out, and I thought, like, this list can't do anything with the Nantexes if there's multiple on the table. And I was, like, really tempted to drop it, but I decided I'm just going to go with the math and hope people aren't going to bring that many Nantexes and hopefully just dodge them, which, luckily, I did not play a single Separatist player in my entire run of Worlds.
Yeah, so this is a quick service announcement, because you, I think it was on Fly Better or something like that, if you haven't yet, go listen to Fly Better's interviews of the top 16, because it's really good. But some people were asking, oh, well, Nantex didn't win Worlds. Where were they at? We didn't see them. Like, how many of the top 16's plan for Nantex was, I hope I just don't see it in the cut?
I think majority of us.
Like, it was all but one. Yeah, so 15 of the top 16 lists were like, yeah, no, we get dumpstered by a good Sun player. We just didn't see any.
Yeah, it was pretty common to hear that as the reaction. Like, I'm just hoping to dodge the matchup.
Yeah, I just took from my experience of going to my first Worlds, like, at the time, the double Jumpmaster, Jumpmaster with Torque Boats and Fen Rao, all with Mind Link, was, like, the boogeyman at the time after the nerfs to the other lists. And, like, okay, I'll plan a list to fight that. And I played a total of one of them after losing three games, which so didn't matter. So it's one of those things, like, I think going into this world, the Nantex is super strong, and some people did bring it. I'm just hoping that the chances of playing multiple in a row was so low that I'll take the one loss if I see it. Let's hope that I didn't see it in the cut. Also, that's your original plan. I didn't even think I was going to even make the cut. My plan was to see how well I can do, and it turned out quite well. So, yeah, I brought up this list, using it well, and no, and I think the biggest thing is it was so different than what most people were expected of a standard list that people were expecting, because no one knew what GA97 did, and it's completely expected. The card he's never seen any use. There was exactly two copies brought to Worlds total. It was my list and Ryan Farmer, who copied my list when I told him about it. So I had to spend the first like minute of setup explaining what this card did and getting a lot of confused looks on why it has so many charges and what it does. It's like, no, it's just quite simple. How many charges you spend is how many full turns Finn's off the table. When it's fully recharged, Finn appears. And it just appears anywhere he wants from range one in from the table edge. But yeah, so going on, I started off quite well. I think my run was a bit luck dependent on matchups. I got a good dice rolls for like the first couple matchups. So I played against, first place with Kayla, which I believe is Marcel's fiance.
Yeah.
Yeah, and she was flying five TISFs with optics and crack shots, and one was a backdraft. So going into it, they had the same initiatives, similar kind of idea of just constant firepower with advanced optics. But since I had Finn come from a flank attack, and she did not be able to, she couldn't get away from Finn because they're fast ships, but not super fast. And I got to pick off and slowly just whittle down all their ships, and she just couldn't keep focus on the A-Wings as they darted around and blocked up the field. So that was all it went to time, though. She still had one ship left on the table. I took some damage, but I got a solid win of that. And then I lucked into, I guess I want to say it's a newer player or a local player. He was flying Forlom, Koshka Frost, and Palob. So three initiative, three scum list with two medium bases. I think he was prepared to see some Nantexes with that list because he had some stress control in there, of course, Forlom with advanced sensors. Yeah. He had 000. But he run the roll-off for initiative, decided where to go first. And I was a bit confused because he has advanced sensor Forlom. It's like, okay, so I got to pretty much arc dodge with my A-Wings. I took up Forlom on round two of combat, and then I just focused all guns on Palob as Koshka just darted around doing almost nothing because he couldn't get a good mark on the same ship. So
yeah, I think I played that guy in the LCQ.
Yeah. Like, I think it's not a bad call against like some Nantex stuff, but like they did not make a good decision going into taking the initiative and moving first because it gave full information to my A-Wings. Then I played into resistance matchup. He was playing Poe, Finn, Covenel, and Tally. This one was a bit worried because he had Leia, of course, Leia on Kova, and had a position. He started off doing actually pretty well. He got his Tally straight into my Vibrandi and got some decent shots at the start. He got some long-range shots from A-Wing. But when Finn appeared, I managed to corner out his Poe with, like, a bait. I was baiting into, like, going to Tally, and I just every gun went on Poe, and I got knocked down Poe to one hit point and blocked him in with an A-Wing in the next round. So I finished off Poe, and I just subsequently just went through each ship and slowly picked it apart. And it just came down to, like, Finn and two A-Wings versus Kova. And sadly, Kova now could not dodge A-Wings forever. And then, yeah, and then I got to play on stream in round 4 on the Gold Squadron. I'm looking forward to that game to come out because it was the first time I think the world got to see what the hell is flying. Supposedly the chat was up in a roar, and Kevin Leitz was casting it, and he had some great things to say about it. So I'm really looking forward to seeing what it is. But I played against a double U-Wing, double Y-Wing, and it also showed the strength more of Finn coming on the flank because he had no way of turning into Finn, and he got just free reign to lay into the side of those ships. And that so started off my day going 4-0 with my list, which I was not expecting. Then I got to play some other local Canadians. I played Kelvin in the round 5, and he was flying 3 Foresight Inquisitors in Vader with passive sensors and afterburners. It was a super, I like the list and like how I think he had sense as well. So you got to see line up his foresights and stuff like that. But the dice in that game were just unfair to him. He had 3 Inquisitors and always had to spend his force or focus to defend against my 2 dice range 3 shots. So it was very.
I'm guessing he also thought foresight was going to work as a secondary weapon.
I think partially. That was, I guess, an interesting thing. He didn't ever use attacks. But he was using foresight, but like I only allowed him, I dodged a lot of his bullseyes.
Yeah.
He used foresight a total of 4 times all game, and I never seen him bullseye. And he wasn't actively trying to use it as a weapon in the combat phase.
Right.
This is unfortunate. He went all in on Finn when he arrived, brought Finn down to 1 hit point, and then proceeded to never
hit him. Never get to shoot him again.
Yeah. Well, he got shots, but he just never got, once he got every ship into it and Finn survived, he had one more round to get, some decent shots into Finn, and then he dodged everything around with the use of just focus strain and just whatever rolls came up. And then after that, he never got more than like 1 ship to shoot Finn around, and then that's not enough to get Finn.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And then I just his defense dice was inept. Allowed it like I was doing 1 damage to Inquisitor every round, a 2 dice shot. Like he had to constantly spend tokens for defense.
That's that's pretty nice.
Yeah. So
those things don't take damage ever.
Yeah, and then he was always 4-starved, focus starved on all his Inquisitors constantly because he was using it just to defend against 1 damage.
Yep.
Then eventually just picked it apart slowly, which sealed my way into day 2, going 5-0 to start. Then I got to play Marcel in the 6th game, which he was flying a very interesting list with a double Naboo Starfighters and Obi-Wan. So he had Rico Lay and Little Orphan Annie. I was very intelligent list in the way he flew it, like just pick off targets with his fancy flying, and he had advanced proton torpedoes. Like he's been flying that list now for quite a while.
Yeah, it's been a month or two for sure. So he flew it at the Chicago hyperspace.
Yeah, so like, it was a very tight game. So he got a lucky shot into one of my A-Wings, but it was a die that round. He lined up advanced proton torpedo with Anakin, but he didn't have to spend the torpedo because he died before that to a random unmodified shot from Ricolet instead. So I was like, okay, just die. So and that allowed it, so he saved his torpedo for an A-Wing shot later in the game, which pretty much got that A-Wing killed. But I got Obi-Wan in the last round of combat, so he won by 10 points. And my A-Wing lived because I would have won by 10 points. So it was a 10-point swing either way. So super, super close game. And then at that point, I checked into, this is where I said, like, MOV matters is, when I checked the standings after round 6, I was the top player for Resistance day 1 at that time. The separating me and the next player was 190 MOV. And so if I lost my last round, only by a little bit, because I earned so much MOV in my other games, I would still get best resistance player. And even though I lost my last round, so I played against Bohan Lee, another Canadian guy. He was one of the few players playing First Order.
Yep.
The game meant nothing to either
of us. We'll come back to that later.
He just threw Kylo Ren straight at me. And I shot Kylo Ren for four rounds in a row with my entire list. Then Kylo Ren walks away with only taking four damage. And just leaves. So it's okay. Sure. Yeah. It is one of those things. But anyways, yeah. So that game was
for resistance,
pretty close.
Right? So you got the
we did shot for shot. It came down to Finn and a one-hit point A-Wing versus a one-hit point Tabs and a two-hit point Kylo Ren. Slightly more points on the table. He won by 11. But since I preserved my MOV, I ended day one 5-2 with the highest MOV at 2036,
sure.
MOV. In general. So I also placed as highest resistance.
Oh, for sure, dude.
So since I didn't lose too much MOV.
Which takes us to day 1B, where none of us play. But we got to go do pods
the person
inside
underneath
the
next
time,
highest resistance.
Which got us to introduce,
like,
or got to introduce us
game,
to
I had a higher
Aces High.
So I came in
which we should take a small break to talk
one,
about, because that was
highest,
super
and
dank.
Highest MOV in general of all 5-2s. So that was... up until that point, I was actually even forgot about the best in faction rewards. Like the template tray, I was happy to be there. And then I remember that, I was... It's like, oh man, I need to go get this. And then when I finally got that tray at 11:30 at night, and it was super exhausted.
Well, and suiciding was real bad,
was
too.
Also
so
just glowing with excitement.
But yes, so for everybody that's been under a rock and hasn't seen everybody talking about it for the last week, it's basically you have a point interval.
Yeah.
So the point interval we were playing at was 80 points. So you bring one ship with 80 points.
And of course,
it is
a
free for all. So there's between four
they
and eight ships on the table. Depends on how many people
sense.
You're playing
so,
with. Eight gets a little overcrowded. Six seemed to be the sweet spot. Four kind of got into like. You had like two 1v1s a lot of the time.
But bombs were never clarified. Like
so six seemed pretty cool.
Until,
at least that was my experience with
it. The rules. So bombs count and actually count from damage I dealt. So it is actually denied people points or just counted as suiciding, which was quite hilarious.
Yeah,
it could be. Suiciding was
for
super
sure.
bad. So
right, yeah. So the way it ended up working out is
four
every
was,
time you die,
yes,
you come back in the following
close,
turn at
like
a spawn
even
point
an odd
that are
like,
at fixed points on the
then
map.
You always have a third party
and you roll a die to see which way you come out of the spawn point. And those are the little hyperspace markers that came in the core set that you probably all threw away. So you're going to have to go out and buy a new core set. but so that was kind of cool because if you had disposable charges of things like Wedge with proton torpedoes or Soontra with stealth device or, you know, like bombs or something, or rigged cargo chutes, like you want to bring Scum Han with rigged cargo chutes, every time you die, you get all those charges back. So like I played against a Scum Han with cargo chute list that like we killed him three times over the course of like the hour. And there was like six cargo chutes on the freaking table after that. Right. So you have the standard six obstacles and then you have six extra obstacles on the table. It was ridiculous.
Yeah, I was playing with proxy.
Yeah,
mines
same idea with proxy mines. Not looking forward to cluster mines being back in the game. but initiative works just the same way it does in a standard 206. So it's, you know, your I6s move last, your I1s move first, and then if there's a tie between initiative, you either use bid or you roll off and, you know, players choose. So that was pretty cool. And it was interesting because, like, so I, like, the ship I eventually ended up moving to was Soontrafel with Lone Wolf, Stealth Device, and Afterburners. Because that was like an 8-point bid, so it's I can pretty much guarantee I'm moving last. But the that's really good because the first time you deal damage to somebody, you get a point. Like if they haven't taken any damage at all. Mind you, if they go over a rock or self-damage themselves, like they prevent that first blood point going out. But if you kill someone, you get 2 points and a bounty on your ship. And then that bounty, if you can hold onto it to the end of the game, adds to your point total. But if someone kills you, they get all of the bounty markers to like their point total. Not like it doesn't they only get one bounty marker, but they get points for all your bounty markers. So I found that I would continually get a lot of points, but I wouldn't win, or I would be very close because I wouldn't get the kills. I would tag someone early and then someone else would get the kill. So for me to get a kill, it would have to be multiple people would have to shoot into someone, and then I'd have to snipe them at the start of the next round.
Yeah, it was good actually having, like, when I was playing my Death Run, beat Initiative 4, I got to shoot last and long around, so I got to have Fireball.
Yeah.
Weaken 2 hit-point targets and just finish them off and get kills.
But it was really cool. Like, Will, you wedged with Snapshot a couple of times, right?
Yeah, so the like, when we were doing the, like, day 1B or whatever, I just had Vader with passive sensors, afterburners, and hate, I think. And then that worked really well too. And then it was like, oh, okay, the next day, you know, I'll be just playing pods and stuff. And I'm like, oh, hey, I'll bring another build for playing Aces High, because people started playing Aces High in just the regular Hangar Bay pods. And so I was like, because of that first mechanic, you know, getting points and so forth, I was like, Wedge with Snapshot seems like that would be pretty good, especially if you can just kind of move into a spot and they slide through you. Plink one damage down, get a point, and then maybe you can chase them or, you know, continue to shooting after that. So it was Proton Torps, Snapshot, and a hull upgrade, because in that format you also don't want to regen, because every time you regen up to full, then you got potential for getting first blooded again. So you're just kind of encouraging more people to shoot at you with that way. I found it actually is more beneficial when you die, because you get all your charges back. So you might as well, if you're going to eat it, you might as well eat it quickly. But even that hull upgrade deterred people from shooting at me a couple times, because I got 7 hit points. So worked out really well. I played, I think it was 3 different games of Aces High on that second, or that, I guess that third day or whatever. And that build just trounced.
It was really good. I played someone with that exact build in my in the main event, Aces High.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, that was the Wedge that kept stealing all my Sun Fat kills, because I had the bit over him, so I would tractor beam stuff, and then he would kill it before I'd get a chance to shoot.
Awesome.
Yep.
Yeah, the whole format is actually really, it's just really fun, and I think while, you know, more people, you know, will play it, will find like the really silly, janky stuff that you can do in 80 points that kind of breaks it a little bit. You already kind of talked about the infinite cargo shoots and proxy mines and stuff. Those they can probably easily back away.
Yeah, there's a wolf. I don't know if they care, right? Like, because you can just change core values.
Sure. But I meant like you could do one of the things where it's like you can only keep so many on the table or something like that. Because at some point you could literally drop cargo chutes or proxy mines on every single spawn point, and then no one can respawn.
No, you respawn, you just take damage right away.
Yeah, you respawn, I drop bombs on the.
Oh, like, we had that happen a number of times.
You remove the bomb, take the damage. Which actually, a lot of people actually started doing. I did that to myself just to make sure so no one can get first blood.
Oh, because we did it because we had someone with spare parts canisters in one game, and they literally dropped spare parts canisters on a couple of the spawn points, and since that's an obstacle, like, you couldn't respawn there. The cargo chutes might work that way, but the proxy mines, you just damage people. But in any case, the format's really cool, and what I liked about it with the initiative system, right, it works just like normal. So if you want to be moving last to like dodge arcs and stuff, you're also potentially sacrificing that, you know, shoot first and get first blood points mechanic. So there's a little bit more of a balance to the bidding and the wanting to go last for everything, and, you know, that type of thing. So at least a little bit better than, you know, in the normal kind of 200 point dogfight anyway. So but yeah, really, really fun. I think a lot of people start spreading that now that everyone's coming back from Worlds, and it'll probably take off as a really cool kind of side event format.
Yeah. I stole a sheet of paper with the rules on it, so I can have
It's going to be in the, like, the Epic Scenarios rules book.
Yeah, so I believe all this is in the Epic Scenario rules, because they said they're going to pull it from there. So there's going to be a lot of missions coming out, hopefully, with that and the card packs. So we'll see what it comes up in the future. Yep.
At this point, we should also just try and petition Chris that at Crate Cup we have a Aces High event tournament of some kind. You know, kind of do it maybe draft style or something like that.
Shall we talk about the cut? Or actually, Blair, you've been pretty quiet. From an outsider, so you weren't... What did you get to see and hear from the internets?
Well, I may or may not have a question for you when we get to it, Kalen. But yeah, I just wanted to say Dion's, it was awesome. Like, I think he actually might have even had four games going, at least during the cut. But that was fantastic. My only qualm, and I don't know like how Dion decided this, but like, because one of the top eight games was like Boba Fenn against Daniel's like five ship rebel, and like Boba just gets caught at range two and is like, you know, dead after one turn basically, and then like Fenn took a bunch of shots. It was like over, and like everyone kept like asking to go back, and they kept going back to it. So I guess. I would have preferred if they had like stayed with the more competitive games, but otherwise it was pretty awesome being able to watch that. So
that was one of the takeaway. Yeah, that was one of the cut games, right? Like one of the top four, top eight or something.
I think it was top eight.
Yeah. So I think there I don't know, Dion could probably maybe explain, and maybe he's doing that on his cast or whatnot, but I think like FFG wanted to put a certain game on their stream, and so maybe he was kind of more dictated as far as which table he was supposed to focus on or something. I don't know, but that seemed to be in some sense situations like FFG was trying to focus on their game, and so Dion couldn't necessarily cross over to those, but I could be wrong. Maybe there was a simpler explanation.
Well, he's saying the other games that Dion had.
Oh, the other games that he had on the other like picture.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. Oh, okay. I see.
But on that point, man, Dion's stream and like just in terms of like audio and video quality was like so far and away better than FFG's. It like wasn't even close. Oh, and that's like just audio and video.
The commentary was probably also a lot better too. Would have been my
you said it, not me, Tyler. But...
Yeah, I will. I'll say it.
I don't know if like FFG like could or would like accept a petition from us to like just let Gold Squadron and let us vote on who we want to commentate it. But I think that would be awesome if they did.
So it was weird because they had the First Earth guy commentating, right?
No, the First Earth. So what I heard after talking to him, First Earth is actually just there to help. So he did all the overlays and stuff of that. So it was just the FFG stuff. So Alex did it. Matt Holland and a couple of others. So it was FFG.
Yeah.
But they're also running, like, I watched a little bit. Like, they were just doing a decent job. They were okay. Dion and the guys doing it, that's, like, almost their, like, extra hobby. They have a lot of practice behind it. And, like,
yep.
Nothing on the FFG guys because they're also holding, like, raffles and draws and, like, other fan things. Like, when was the last time like Alex probably got a chance to cast? So it's like this.
We've ran into this before though, where I know we've talked about it, and they like basically on the FFG Twitch stream, they can't have anybody that's not an FFG employee.
Yeah.
Right. So, like, basically what it boils down to. So like as much as we would like to have people that might be a little bit better or have more experience or more, you know, high level game knowledge, that kind of stuff. It's just, that's never going to happen, which is frustrating because yeah, Dion does do an awesome job. I don't know if, did you watch the Junkie stream at all?
Blair? I was basically just on Gold Squadron the whole time and whatever.
Gotcha. Dion was going back and forth. So, we did an 8-player, like world championship for Aces High, that I won. So I'm your unofficial official 2019 Aces High champion with a that Sundra Phil belt I was talking about. And the throwback I was saying earlier, Kalen, was in that game I went two straight rounds dodging 5+ ships shooting at me with taking zero damage. Like it was pretty over the top. just 2 evades every single time. Like, nope, no problem. Yeah, go away. You can't hit me. This isn't a real thing. Stop it. And so my for winning it, I got like this Icelandic beer from the two Icelandic guys that were there. And they were like, oh, you get this beer. That's it. And I was like, oh, well, okay. So if I win this and I win a beer, I'm obviously going to shotgun it. And everyone around me was like, wait, what do you mean? Like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
And so, like, I cracked the beer, but I'm also standing amongst, like, I don't know, $10,000, $20,000 worth of streaming equipment. So I was like, it was the most careful, don't spill any, don't let it get, like, splashed anywhere shotgun of that I have ever done. But that's up on Flybetter's page, which is a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. So, I think on the second part, too, we'll go into the cut, but
yeah,
scaring Destiny players with a
random. Oh, man, scaring Destiny players was great. They had, like, I mean, the Destiny players were obviously all there having fun. Like, it's all a bunch of memes, if you've seen any of, like, the go back and forth on, like, the different Facebook groups. But there was a number of times where it was, like, annoyed Destiny players were just looking at X-Wing players, and X-Wing players were having the time of their lives because we were just, like, messing around, doing what we were doing, a random 8-player free-for-all on stream while drinking, right?
With while
the cut's happening, like, two tables over from us, just hooting and hollering and then shotgunning a beer. And there's in the video, you can see, I don't know the guy's name, but he was the runner up from Gen Con. He just, like, looks back and you just see the, like, the shrug and eye roll of, like, yeah, of course the X-Wing players are shotgunning a beer over there while we're trying to have our finals.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, we had all of the on top crowd, which was, there was, like, stands that we could go up into because we were basically playing on, like, the floor of this arena. And so we all went up there because it actually had, like, a pretty good view of, like, all of the tables where we could just kind of see what was going on.
It was a great view up there.
Yeah. And hang out. And, so then of course, like, there was, because the Canadians got us all drunk, we were all drunk up there yelling at people on the down there to try to get more people to come up, and then yelling at the Destiny players for not having enough fun, and having FFG staff come up and tell us to quiet down a number of times.
I didn't know about that part.
Oh, yeah, no, it was before. So, I think it was Wade came up first and was like, hey, can you guys stop yelling people's names down to the floor? Because we would just see someone we know, and we'd be like, oh, Tim Dugan, you need to come up here. What? No, I don't want to. No, Tim. Like, just peer pressure into getting up there so we'd have more people. And so we're like, okay. And then I look at Wade and I was like, Wade, can we yell faction names? He just kind of looked at me weirdly and was like, what? It's like, okay, thanks. You can go away now. Because that was basically right before your top 8 game.
Yeah. At least we can say that. That was good.
Yeah.
So we talk about the cut.
Yeah, let's go.
All right, so day two. So this is what MOV mattered. So I had the highest MOV of, I was the highest MOV of 5 and 2s of both days. Actually, and most of the 5 and 2s of day 1A had higher MOV. So I made I got the bye in the first round of the cut. So I now played the first top 128. I was in 26th or 27th place. And a couple others underneath me made it too of 5 and 2. So I got a free round in the top 64. It was like pretty sweet there. I was like, sweet, top 64 world. I've won my day. Like, my trip's good. And then, yeah, I just kept going. So first round, I played against Alando, Luke, and Braylon list with pretty minimal upgrades. I think Luke was naked with just S-foil. Braylon had Crackshot, and Lando had Nin-Num, and that was it. It was looking pretty good for me to start. I got a good block off and kept Lando in position and got, like, focus fired and took Luke down to 1 hit point. And then the game swung when Lando got a target lock on Garrett, who was retreating. He boosted into range 1 and rolled hit, crit, crit. I rolled only 1 paint, took the crit, direct hit, and lost a full hit point in 1 shot. And that was the only A-Wing that wasn't damaged yet, because all the others had took some damage. And, like, that really put me behind, so I had to fight my way back, because at this point I had killed Luke, brought Braylon down to, like, 1 hit point, but I had to chase down this Lando that only took 3 damage with a 1 hit point A-Wing and Finn. But I managed to turn it around. Second last turn of the game, I got Lando to half, and my A-Wing survived by rolling 3 paint on defense against his 3 paint attack. And I managed to, that next round, get out of range, and the time was called. So I barely won that one on the last shot of the game. Then I played into top 32, played against a triple imperialist, a fellow member of the 186, I think his name is Lewis from the UK. He was flying Sutrafel, Vader, and Duchess. And that game was, it's one of those games that it could go either way. Like, I have the tools to fight triple aces, but if I don't get them early and get some damage through, it'll be a long slog the longer the game goes on. But I managed to take out Duchess with some long shots, as his green dice does not want to just help him with a Duchess defense. And I managed to get a block into Vader and Soontir, and I got Soontir with a good range one Finn shot, and it just came down to Vader versus like Finn and three A-wings, which was a pretty tight match, but overall it was a pretty solid victory on my. I went to top 16, which is on Gold Squadron. I think this is the game that a lot of people talk to me about. So I was played against I can't remember his name. Was it Pierre? I think it was. He's from the French team or from a French player. He flew Cassian, Wedge, Jan Ors, and a generic Z95, and he had crack shot on Wedge and Cassian, and he had Moldy Curl on Jan Ors. And I went in, I was trying to bait in and tried to look like I was engaged his front of his list, and I jumped in and tried to go all ships onto Jan Ors, which I got a pretty good engagement. I got a good amount of damage on Jan Ors to start and then finished on the second round. But so I was looking pretty good, took some damage in A-Wing. And then when he had two arcs into Finn, and I thought, he's going to shoot with the shots. I can spend my focus on Guerrier to try to kill the Z95 before it fires. And then Cassian decided to take a range 3 shot at my Guerrier. And then he rolled hit, hit, crit, and Guerrier rolled focus, focus, blank, blank, and took a direction and died immediately again. Which was really turned back, because that was also my A-Wing that didn't take damage. It would have been fight back. And then it followed that up. My Finn took a shot into, I think it's like one hit point or two hit point Wedge with no tokens, got the 3 paint, and he rolled 3 natty evades. So it really put me behind, and it came down to I had 2 A-Wings left, one being a 1 hit point Zari and a green squadron with 1 shield down versus a 1 hit point Wedge and a Cassian with 3 shield damage. So it was 1 hit point away from half. And time was called, and then last moves, I picked some moves I need to. If Cassian stalled, I could get some shots in him and try to get that half points. And he was right in front of a debris cloud. He decided he's going to go for the math, go for that 4 forward through debris cloud, so I couldn't shoot him. And he rolled the crit to half hit point himself on the very last roll of the game. Pushed me to top 8. And then I guess, Blair, did you want to talk about the top 8 game? Is that what you were mentioning before? Or you had a question for
it? All I ask is I might have a question for you later. You instinctively knew that I was going to prefer that.
I think a lot of people have for that game. But
yeah. Well, so we should point out that every time your Finn pod came on, you would shout, "It's the Resistance."
So I'll start from day one. So I told Liz to day one. And then Devin said, you need to shout "It's the Resistance." I'll get all the Canadians to respond to it. So I started day one shouting it every time Finn came on. I got Farmer to do it. It started off relatively strong. Died as the day went on, as people got pushed further and further away.
Yeah, it didn't die. Farmer kept doing it, and it kept happening at the bottom table. The problem is everyone else saying it's the Resistance was not near you anymore.
No, and I said it once on the top 4 run stream, and I got no response. So it felt like the movie. No response to the Resistance. They started picking up when I got to the high tables. But when I hit day 2, the cut, and it was a bit quiet to start, but once I hit the stream tables, and that last final one in the top 8 table was amazing. Having the entire stands, not just the Canadians.
There was probably like, 50, 60 of us up there at this point?
It was like, 50, 60. The guys on the floor, everyone
was great. Because it was late enough in the night that all of the pods had basically died down, so we weren't playing pods anymore, so we're just all hanging out there. And that's why I was like, can I say the name of a faction? And Wade's like, what the hell are you talking about?
Yeah.
Like, don't worry about it, man. I just need to yell here shortly. It'll be fine.
Yeah, it was a great feeling having not just like the locals, but the entire like X-Men community behind my silly list and Finn coming on the table, and the memes. So, yeah, that one too. I think in that game, threw into the dice camera and shouted "It's the Resistance," and put Finn on the table. So, Blair, what's the question about the? Is it just the game in general, or?
Fortress, yes or no?
Well, within the rules, like, I don't think, like, he's not fortressing in the same sense of, like, not moving. Is it a mobile fortress? Yes. Is it delaying for time? Yes. It's kind of hard to say, like, in the sense of the rules. It's up for a big dispute. When going into that, I don't think I had a bad engage because I had the full concave I wanted. I think I knew where my mistakes were, and I went too fast with two of my A-wings. Like, I got a block I wanted. I thought it would block more, but he managed to get past it. So it left Zari a bit out for dry because I thought the blocks would do slightly better. And then, like, where Greer landed, it was just me going slightly too fast. I should have just taken the boost instead. So, like, I could have made a slight better adjustment. And then that game was more decided. Like, his red dice were just super hot and decided, like, well, your A-wings are just going to die now. But I think, like, it wasn't a bad engage. As I said, I got exactly kind of where I wanted to be, even in his castling. So I think my list is one of the ones I can crack it because I have, like, the Finn that can arrive from a weird angle. I couldn't get the damage through because the greens were just always average, like rolling two paint between focus and evading, and his red dice was hot.
So you say you had a good list that can crack it. Hypothetically, I don't know what list that would be. You could tell us. If you had one that you didn't think, would the thought have crossed your mind to call a judge?
Yeah, probably. So it was brought to my attention before the game even started. A couple people approached me and talked to me about, like, what's going to happen. He talked to the judges before the game. And it's kind of hard to say, like, what do I bring up? It's like, playing? That's like, it's...
Well, yeah, I mean, it's... So, okay. So it's basically boils down to, like, what camp you fall in, which is the... Is a mobile fortress or a mobile castle or whatever, basically just staying in your board quarter and not enforcing an engage on your terms because you have final salvo numbers. Is that stalling the game to an advantageous benefit is basically like what the loose verbiage of the rules. A lot of people think that is the case, and that's been kind of the transition, but from the like quad phantom players and the like. Because those weren't really in the rules until that point, because we didn't have like the static fortressing rules and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And that was something that like Paul pushed for with Nova this past year, was like, hey, here's how we're going to rule on this. This is what we're going to do, you know, yada, yada. Mm-hmm. So that was the frustrating side, is because basically the marshal had said, this isn't explicitly against the rules, so we're not going to do anything, even if it means people don't get to play like real games of X-Wing, which I kind of understand because you are at Worlds, right? Like, so I was playing Sunfac, which is a very negative play experience ship. Like that's what it is. But if this was at another event, such as like LVO or Nova, it would have been ruled in a manner that like, hey, you need to engage. Hey, you're going to get warning points, that kind of a stuff. So.
Yeah. It's kind of hard to say. It's like, for me, I'm looking more, even at one point, like Miranda Nim, where the engagement is not, it's the entire ship is running. So like people had the fortress to beat it, because it's like you're just playing into their game. And it's same idea, like since there's no way to say force someone to actually engage with each other, there's no different than half my game, my first like three moves is running away, and then I'm gonna engage on the right terms of what I want. So I'm gonna turn my A-wings in eventually, but there's no difference than not just flying straight at each other. Like how can you say, like, how many turns does the turn count thing that he's going to disengage? Like, so I talked after. If I engaged and we fought and I disengaged, like, I baited into him. Just before we shoot, I pull away. And he moved out, and then he returned to his corner. Then, like, they were willing to say something because he went back to his space and not fly into the table. Where, like, I clearly did try.
Yeah.
But that's, like, the only thing to really do is, like, if... Then they can say it's like selling, because he's like, there's no reason you should be flying back into this corner where there's nothing here. So, yeah, it's a difficult one. It's not something like I'm completely necessarily against, because as rules was written, because that's more a way of play. It's like there, so it's necessarily wrong. Yes, it kind of sucks, but like I thought I could crack it, I couldn't. So I'm not like any butthurt about it, like some other.
I don't know as anybody is actively butthurt about the whole situation. It's just, yeah. It is frustrating that like it's
frustrating. So it's very hard to deal with because not to something you just say in text.
Yeah. And the other side is there's some pretty disingenuous arguments being made that, like, oh, well, they just want us to just joust. That's the only thing you do. Like, that's not the case. Like, there's a million games out there where it's like, hey, we don't take that many shots, but we're actively positioning. Like, you're actively taking new position and trying to gain an advantage. And that's not what's happening.
It's a brick of Star Viper actually trying to flank or get in position. All my A-Wings are starting to separate and get to different positions to attack from multiple angles. He's not doing any of that. He's literally, I'm going to keep this brick and use my angled barrel rolls to maintain a wide arc to maximize defensive approach. It's a tough call. And I don't really have anything to say. It's above, I guess, my pay grade. I don't really have a certain stance on it. I would have to think long and hard on it and get, like, not just myself to make a decision, but it has to be a community decision.
Yeah.
Well, there were definitely some butthurt people on Twitch, I don't tell
you that. Well, Twitch, that's Twitch chat. And a lot of times you get there's no filter. Everyone goes to extremes to show off.
Well, it was my game one, it was Tie Swarm on Sun Swarm, and everyone, like, Twitch chat was nothing but, oh, this game's going to go to time. Okay. It didn't. It finished 15 minutes early. Like,
well,
what up?
I got some messages from my friends at Twitch chat. I wasn't using GA97 correctly, or something wrong with the text. I was like,
sure, whatever.
Sure. Does anyone know how to use it correctly? Does anyone actually look at this card?
Well, that's actually that was what was pretty dang, because I had like three different judge calls for Struts alone. And for those of you that don't know, I bought all of my CIS swarm in Poland, and so all of my Struts are in Polish. And like, I got a different judge every time that was walking by. He's like, oh, can I see the card? And I was like, sure, it's not gonna help. Here's my phone with the actual text. And they look at it like, Jesus, and set it down, like, pull up an actual card.
Yeah.
Sorry, guys. It's Worlds. It counts.
It does.
It's FFG official product, sir. So. But yeah. No, it was, you know, it was a great run. Ollie was our eventual world champion. He played really well. I find it funny that everyone keeps talking about, I guess I see the game differently. Everyone keeps talking about how Daniel got like a crazy block and then, like, you know, killed Vader, and Vader just like pieced out, and then Ollie brought it back. But it was when that happens, like, Ollie got like Wedge to like one hull, and Wedge is the only ship that worries his Whisper. Like, his Whisper will solo that list by herself if Wedge is
completely there. When I saw it, it's like, oh, right? Man, he got, when I saw this, I was like, ooh, Daniel's looking down, four damage on to Wedge, and then, oh, he killed Vader in return. That's a pretty sweet trade, but, like, it's gonna still be a tough one.
Right, and it's like, even there, it's like, I go, yeah, okay, I'll give you all day if I can get almost all of Wedge. And then he got Wedge like the next round or two rounds later. It was like, oh, nope, it's over. It was like, oh, you know, it fought hard. Like, I mean, it was a well-flown game, don't get me wrong. I don't want to take anything away from either of them, but it's just like, understanding the Empire Aces matchup into that, like, Whisper cares absolutely zero about every other ship on the table.
Oh, yeah, I think it's also like showing that too, that game was very different if it was a standard 75-minute game, because I think the Vader died on the first hour, when Vader died, and then the first engagement, like, really went in. So if it was a standard 75-minute, like, Dan and Taylor would probably had it, but since he had that extra time to play it, it's like, Ollie fought it back because he had the time to do it. Where, like, two-hour matches really favor the slow, like, Ollie's very methodical and, like, smart player with that, and flying the AAA says he had the time to.
He wasn't happy with the trade, but he made some, like, pretty ballsy moves there, and that's what you have to do when you're down like that. You can't just, like, make, like, the standard play. You have to get aggressive, make an aggressive move, and I felt like that's what he did, and I think that's why. Like, I understand, like, he wanted to get Wedge off the table, but he was not happy with that trade at all. He was, like, bemoaning the fact that he thought that Vader was gonna live on, like, one. Because that's about what the average was. But I felt like he played awesome to come back from that. Ollie's always been a great guy. He really has. If anyone that knows him, he's a legitimate good person. So happy for him.
I was out drinking with him until about 2 in the morning that night, which was super fun. Because we went to like a local bar afterwards. So everything finishes up X-Wing related. Will and I had stepped out early with some of the other guys and went and got tacos and like dumped all of our crap at the hotel. So we all pile into this local downtown St. Paul bar, but there was a Miranda Lambert concert in the same event center that we were in. So as we're walking back from the hotel, there's just a million people in plaid coming out of a Miranda Lambert concert, right? And it is drunk moms as far as the eye can see, including one that is on those stupid battery operated scooters. It's just like, I'm walking on the, Will and I are walking on the sidewalk and she's just like driving straight at me. And I'm like, maybe 10 feet away from me, she like finally recognizes that there's someone in front of her and turns, but she turns too sharply and just straight eats shit into the ground. Like, and I was like, huh, yeah, this is way past my pay grade. I'm just going to keep walking. Like, nope, we're good. And
that was the first of two that
So we eventually get to the bar, so we're at the bar hanging out. Will, where were you in the bar? I don't even remember you being there. Like
I noticed because I was talking to Duncan for a while, and then it was like, oh okay, where'd Tyler go? Oh okay, over there. And then you were talking with some people. There were some of the UK guys around, and then I got like weirdly pinched in this weird no man's land where I was like TVs, bathroom, and like
three crowds of the bar back. Got it.
Yeah, and I was like stuck in between a whole bunch of people, and I was like, well, okay, cool. I'll just keep watching NBA preseason highlights for a while.
Fair.
Yeah.
No, so I was at the bar, and there was three local St. Paul girls there that were out like celebrating one of their birthdays or something like that. And so I was talking to them because they could actually get drinks from the bartenders. So I was like, anybody else trying to get a drink just did not happen. And it'd be like, hey, like I would like a 312. Here's money. She's like, all right, I got you. Like then the drink would slide back to me. And so just talking to them. And of course, like we have people from all over Europe and Australia and Singapore that are like wandering back and forth. Right. And, I just would keep stopping them and be like, oh, hey, this is my buddy Tom. And be like, oh, where is this one from? He's like, oh, I'm from Sydney, mate. Like, and they would just like lose their shit. And then one of them was like, oh, I'm going to Ireland like in a couple of months. It's like, oh, hold on. We've got one of those too. Someone go find the Wookiee. Get the Wookiee over here to come tell her about Ireland.
Nice.
Yeah, it was just a hoot.
Do you sleep that night or do you just go on the plane?
No, so I got... So for those that don't know, I had two of my friends were getting married at 11 a.m. on Sunday morning. So I had a 6:30 a.m. flight out of MSP. So I got back to the hotel at about 3:30-ish, I think, because it was like the bars closed, we were outside, and then we were trying to figure out if we were going to go to like a house party or not. And then there was a fight that happens, and and all the Australians were just awestruck that there was like two drunk American dudes just arguing in the street and yelling at each other. And then I started yelling at one of them because they used a gay slur, and that got other Minnesotans behind me like, dude, don't get into those. Like, no, this is 2019. They can't fucking say that. I'm just walking back. I need to like air quotes go to sleep. And that was really just get my gear together so I could leave. So I got back. This was like the first night my dad hadn't been in the hotel because he left that morning. So I was like, I would have had the bed to myself for a change, but I got about an hour of sleep before I woke up and then got my gear, Ubered to the airports. Barely got on my plane because I was kind of late getting there because the Uber took a while to get to the hotel and I just kind of mistimed everything in my drunk/tired haze. Touchdown in Peoria at like 9:55. Got into my car. I realized during like, I think it was Saturday, that I didn't have my dress shoes in my car because I was originally just going to change into my suit in the parking lot and just drive straight to the wedding because they had like a cocktail hour mimosa thing at 10, starting at 10. And I was like, I don't have my shoes. I only have these brand new yellow and red Pumas that I've been wearing the whole time. I was like, those are not going to work with my suit. So I drove home. I was like, I smell awful. I should shower. So showered, got dressed, showed up at like 10:55 with my date already being in and sat down walked by both of the grooms, like shook their hands real quick. It's like, all right, I'm going in. See you guys in a minute. but I made it. And then I drank a bunch there to like kick the hangover, and they had like a brunch breakfast bar, which was amazing. So it was lots of potato and eggs. So I was able to like soak up all the previous 20 hours worth of drinking. Because, I mean, we started drinking at like 3 p.m. Saturday night, maybe even before that, right? Like,
I don't know.
Because you were playing main event stuff. We were like playing Aces Pods, and it was me and Carson just drinking our Polish vodka.
No, I just know, like, I walked up, I think round top 32, maybe top 16, and that Icelandic guy just handed me, I was like, I'm taking a swig of this.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yep. It was a blast. So made it to the wedding. The wedding was awesome. And then promptly like got home and just like passed out and woke up like halfway through Monday.
Seems fair. Seems fun. But overall, it was a great week.
Yeah, absolute blast. It always is.
Yeah, it was. I think the only thing I wish where we were, and like I wish was it's the problem with like X-Men at the time. There's too many people. There's so many different communities clashing. It's 100%. Like hard to get everyone to go out and go see different things, and like everyone wants to travel so many different areas, and it's just too many people to go just one area. It'd be nice to see if we can like organize like almost a meetup, like try to rent out a bar, like on one of the nights, like on like before or after Worlds, to get everyone there.
Yeah, it's getting hard because we used to do that, right? Like we used to do like Gold Squadron, like they would have an Airbnb, and we would like the 2016 when Marcel and I almost got killed by random robbers and cops, all that nonsense. If you ever want to hear that story in person, I have a video of like 11 squad cars outside of a Little Caesars that we had to deal with. But yeah, it was great.
You can tell in the future.
Yeah. But you're right. There's almost too many people now. So it was pretty cool though, because like there was one night we were playing Secret Hitler like in a random bar on like a Thursday night until 2 a.m. and that was super awesome. I'm really mad that apparently everybody went singing karaoke on Friday night and I just missed it because we were waiting for, my dad played Simeon on the Junkie stream. Like, and then, so we watched that and then we were just kind of, we closed down the Junkie stream. And then it was like, by the time we were done, it was like, everyone was gone. Like we were leaving with the FFG employees level of everyone gone. It's like, man, I wonder where everybody is. And like, everybody was radio silent until like 1 a.m. when, coach finally messaged me and was like, oh, hey, we're here. And I'm like, dude, I've been in the hotel for an hour now at this point. Like, I'm not leaving now, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. It was found for like one of the other days. Like, oh, well, I'm done. Where is everyone?
Yep.
Back to my hotel.
Right. So that side of it, if we just have a... Because this is what we do at the major volleyball tournaments that I go to, is there's like a... we don't like rent out a bar, but there is an official bar for the party. Right. And so in theory, if we know, 50 people are showing up, we can actually like work out a drink package with the bar ahead of time. But I don't know, anybody wants to take that on at that point, but it's just so everybody knows that on Thursday night, if you want to go out with all the X-Wing people, we're all going to this bar.
Yeah.
So we might need to know that. I think part of it was, I didn't know the area. If I hadn't been there, if this was at the game center, I could have told you like where we were going to go each night, that kind of deal.
It was the FFG center. The FFG center, since it's a bit further out in the the rural area, like you're going to be Ubering everywhere. This in downtown, to how many places to pick from, and also too, like on the weekends, like there was the Miranda Lambert concert on Saturday. There was a hockey game on Sunday, so it was busy.
Yep.
But overall, it was a very good experience. I got happy to see. All the Canadians and like also a bunch of all locals, more people from Vancouver got to go because last time it was only two of us, and this time I think a total from the Vancouver area was about six. So it was pretty good seeing more people travel there, and then more people want to go in the future. So it's great just having more people, even just have the opportunity. So like, kudos to FFG and Alex now, who's in charge of OP, making it outside of the FFG Center into this larger arena, a larger location to fit everyone. And be able to like house and actually have all these things go on simultaneously.
Yeah.
Because it was great to have like the invites make it to secure the spots, but then the last chance qualifier and then having like the last chance qualifier didn't sell out until like September. So like everyone had the opportunity to go.
Yeah.
So no one, I don't think anyone felt like they were left out for this world. It was either due to life issues or like other things, not just getting a ticket.
Right.
And not having the space. So that's really good for them. So.
Yep, I agree. It was a blast. I strongly suggest everyone, if you want to go, like, that's the peak X-Wing event. Like, if you want to go to the best X-Wing event where the most people are from quite literally around the world, like, go to Worlds. If you want to go to a adult fun event, go to LVO. It's going to be awesome because it's in Vegas. And then if you want to go to an awesome board gaming event, go to Gen Con. Like, that would be my...
Yeah, and I would say, like, for me, I'd go to, almost now, I'd go to Worlds even if I didn't have a World spot. Because as you do the side events and meeting everyone, it's the one place you can meet everyone from the world and see them again. Like, trying to remember all the people I've met. Like,
I met
one of the other French guys. I never even played him. We just sat together on the last year's Worlds watching, like, the Top Cut and Simeon win. And that's where we met. And we saw each other again. We never ever played a game. Just, that's it, right? But seeing them again is great.
And like I said, the side events were awesome. Like, I had a bad, like, X-Wing weekend showing, right? Including like the chess clock format, which we won't talk about because it was a good idea to start with. They just had terrible execution and they need to change some stuff in it, but I hope they revisit it. Like, I think it has potential. I had a overly ridiculous number of games just have like stupid early variants just make the game not playable for me, and going to Aces High where that doesn't matter. Like, oh, I flew into your face. It's fine. Oh, you killed me. Cool. I'm coming back next turn. Like, be ready. Like, just constantly getting to have fun in that manner. And I mean, I think I probably played like 4 just pods alone of Aces High, plus like the actual Aces High event. Right. Like, that was just so much more relaxing and chill to do and be a part of than, like after having played like main event, you know, stressful games the whole time. To just be able to relax, have fun.
It was good just to sit there with a bunch of other guys, have a drink.
And like listening to Jeremy Chambly to like on the table next to me running like a Sith infiltrator or like a Maul Sith infiltrator that would just go up and smash things in the face, and then he'd intentionally fly in front of people to try to die so that he could get his force back when he'd respawn. Like, shoot me, someone kill me.
Yeah. Chris Allen brought Lieutenant Tabson, right?
Oh, the Tabson was awesome. It was so dank.
Yeah. it's like crap like that. I want to see Aces High with 4 large base ships on the table.
Well, so our 8-man Aces High event, I was the only initiative 6 with Soontir. There was a Rack. There was a Tabson. There was a Major Vermile, who was super dank. Like, Major Vermile with Vader crew was real good. There was a Obi-Wan. Like a Delta 7 Obi-Wan, a Guri in the Star Viper with some other nonsense, I think outmaneuver, like whatever. And who am I forgetting? Like a Kylo Ren. Like a Bun was flying just like raw Kylo. And was just crazy fun. Like the whole time. Turns out when you're flying Soontir Fel, someone's always going to be in your bullseye arc. When there's 7 other ships on the board.
Yeah, and so, 7 other ships and no one's controlling... Everyone's controlling their own mind, so it's all minds.
Oh yeah, well, I just didn't even care if I bumped. I was like, I got 4 agility, lone wolf. Try and hit me. I don't believe you. Turns out I was correct for that one game out of like the 30 that I played that week.
Yeah, it turns out my barrage records were.
Yeah. Yep. So, overall, was an awesome weekend. What is this? We've been rambling for like what, an hour and a half?
Yeah, an hour and a half.
Seems all right. Will, you got anything to add?
No. the first chess qualifier was also on Sunday, which was 5 rounds of kind of everyone was burnt out and just playing games. So a lot of good people got their tickets punched already. Kaylin, I think you already mentioned that you got your spot reserved for top 16. So all those guys for the final cut, you know, made it in. So yeah, that I guess kicks off the official like 2020 season for hunting for your invites and all that stuff. Yeah. The convention center was really awesome, and you know, rumor has it that they can get the projector working for putting the stream games up on the big screen next year, which would be really cool to avoid, you know, having to stare at phones if you couldn't get a good look at a table. So
yeah, it'd be nice to have like get the projector up, especially if it was on the other side of the HQ where the side games are. We can actually have people just stand over there and watch, and they know you don't have an entire crowd around the one stream table.
Yeah, no, that'd be awesome. Like if we were up in the stands and had like the FFG being projected up on there, that'd be super sweet. We were also, because we were being very rowdy and kept feeling like FFG was gonna like come up. I think everyone was paranoid that FFG didn't really care that we were up there and like being rowdy. They were just kind of like trying to keep the peace, obviously, but there's like a curtain that could come down, and we were just waiting for the curtain to get lowered in front of us the entire time.
Just like, block you off.
Nope. Yep. Nope. We've had enough of you. It's curtain down.
You've lost your viewing privileges.
Yep. So, all right, Blair, you have anything to add?
Nope.
You excited for LVO? Has your excitement level gone up from the 4.5? Just talking.
Not really.
Not really. Okay.
We'll work on that. I'm excited for LVO. I'm.
Will, are you going to LVO?
No, I won't be able to. But I'll be trying to make it to St. Louis in a couple weeks, and then we'll go from there.
The real question is, do I fly four Phantoms at St. Louis or not?
I mean, I guess you could always default to that. See who all shows up.
Yep. So. Because you can still get four Phantoms with Crackshot, and they have a four-point bid still. So it seems fine. I don't know. Maybe.
Phantoms,
all right.
Star Vipers, all of Crackshot,
all the way
same
down.
Thing. Yeah, same yep, thing. Same exactly. Team.
Same team indeed. All right. Well, I think that's basically everything that I think we had planned on talking about. We're probably missing something. Huge shout out to just everybody that I met this weekend. Everyone that came up and, you know, introduced themselves and all that kind of stuff. It's awesome getting to meet everybody. It was great getting to meet all the guys from Europe and Australia and Singapore. Like we had a 10 player, a secret Hitler game where, you know, there was like three total Americans in the game, which was pretty awesome.
Oh, I missed out on playing Secret Hitler. I need to get myself in.
Yeah, no, it was good.
In the future.
It was good. But yeah, it was a great time. And hope to see everybody again soon. Hope to see all my international sooner than Worlds next year. We'll have to figure out, you know, money, time off, and all that kind of stuff. If I can get back to the XTC and maybe Australia. Like, I think going to Australia next year would be a lot of fun. So I try to make something like that happen. Blair, you want to go to Australian System Open?
Are you paying?
I'll figure out the money thing later, man. That's like six months away from now.
All right.
All right. Well, from all of us here at the Scum and Villainy B team, I am a still slightly sick Tyler Tippett, better known as Starslinger 72. We've got an also still slightly sick William Barnacle, better known as misspelled Bill Warnacle. Ish.
Sure.
Yeah, right. Kalen Wong. Kalen, do you have a call sign or a name? Or are you just Kalen?
Just Kalen. We can call me Kalen. It's the Resistance for now.
We can call you. Oh, yeah. Kalen, it's the Resistance. Got it. Perfect.
Cool.
And then Blair Bunky, better known as Scruffy. Thanks, everybody. And hope to be back to a more regular schedule here in the next, our normal every 2 weeks. Not holding us to it, but we're going to try to get back on the train. Peace out.